is Taking Aim with
Rev Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, along with
Ralph Pointer.
And today we're going to discuss the upcoming activities in support of Lynn Stewart and the oral arguments on the appeal of Lynn's resentencing that will take place Wednesday, February 29th in the morning at the U.S. Courthouse at 500 Pearl Street in Manhattan. We want you all to be there and to be at the events that will be taking place on the Monday and Tuesday before this important hearing. It's almost 10 years, April 8, 2002, when former Attorney General John Ashcroft stood in the ruins of the World Trade Center to announce the indictment of our mother courage, Lynn Stewart. 10 years. Lynn has gone through the trial. She's gone through the sentencing of 28 months. She went through the appeal of the sentencing, where the appellate court stated that Judge Codal was too lenient to Lynn, gave in their advisory opinions. Remember, this was only their advisory opinions of the mistakes that Judge Codal made. They didn't come up with any judicial error. But they so pounded on Judge Codal that he issued a resentencing of 10 years. The government originally had requested 30 years, a life sentence for Lynn Stewart. And then, even at the resentencing, they were asking for 15 years. Lynn is now facing 10 years, and the appeal of this resentencing will be heard on February 29th. There's an incredible appeal that's been written, which includes a remarkable biography of our mother courage, Lynn Stewart, as well as important legal points. You can find it at www.lynnstewart.org/category/legal docs. Today, Ralph and Ralph will discuss the events that are going to take place, how Lynn is doing at the Federal Medical Center in Carswell, the important work that she's been doing with the other prisoners, and what you can do to support Lynn Stewart and other political prisoners. Ralph.
Well, I think we should understand and make clear to our listeners that the imprisonment of Lynn Stewart and the prosecution and what we call the persecution of Lynn Stewart arises from the fact that she and Ramsey Clark and other attorneys were defending the blind Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman, who was accused of being involved in the Landmarks plot, which is the omnibus terror plot imputed by the government to the blind Sheikh, a plot to blow up the major landmarks of New York City, as well as the bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993. And in the course of the trial, the defense was able to demonstrate that the overwhelming evidence showed the role of not the accused, but rather the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Mossad in these events. That documentation, of course, goes to the heart of the undermining and expose of the real nature of the war on terror and the terrorizing of the American people in the effort to gain acquiescence in wars of predation across the globe. And it's the seminal role of Lynn Stewart in defending the Sheikh, exposing the issues that motivated the government to take an unprecedented step, namely to assimilate the defense attorney to the presumptive crimes of the person that he or she is defending. That effectively wipes out due process, annihilates the Bill of Rights, and makes it impossible for anyone to have a trial in the United States, or for that matter, any lawyer to take on an unpopular client without fear that they themselves will suffer the same consequence of the client merely for the act of defending them. Those are the issues at stake here, and in the effort to frame Lynn Stewart and to bury her alive in prison, her freedom of speech, her basic civil liberties have been abrogated, and of course in the process of abrogating her rights, everybody's rights have been thrown under the bus. And nothing is so clear about that as the formal consequence in the National Defense Administrative Act, which allows the executive and the president to detain anyone at random determination of their own under the aegis of the military without recourse to trial, without the entitlement to know the charges against them, without the ability to consult attorneys. This is what arises from persecution and prosecution of Lynn Stewart, and that's why this case is of fundamental importance to everyone listening to this.
Now, I'd like to go back and put this in perspective of time. Lynn's original so-called crime, defending the blind sheikh, but while defending the blind sheikh, she proved that the government was guilty in this so-called terrorist case. And subsequent to this case, many other lawyers have gone to trial on so-called terrorist cases, and they too prove that the government were the instigators of these so-called terrorist crimes, and there can be no doubt or argument that what they used these terrorist cases to do was blind the American people so that they could pick their pockets. And there could be no doubt that the American people's pockets have been picked in many ways. We are looking to have events prior to Lynn's the 29th. We're looking to have the 28th occupy Tom Paine Park, that's one block from the courthouse, on Lafayette and Worth Street, and the 29th in the morning to be there for Lynn's hearing. Now, one of the things I remember about Lynn, her first day in law school in Newark, she came back and she says, you had to see this wonderful man, Arthur Conoy, who talked about constitutional rights and talked about human rights and talked about how one lawyers. And one of the things that she was impressed with Arthur Conoy, who was very instrumental in the civil rights cases along with Thurgood Marshall and other attorneys, he said, you do not win these cases in the courtroom. You win them outside of the courtroom on the street. So we are looking to win this case before it goes before the judges on the street with the participation of the people who care. So
and when we're talking about occupying Tom Paine Park, we don't mean for a few minutes. You mean from the beginning of Tuesday, the 28th, all the way through the opening of the court session on the 29th.
Exactly. 7 p.m. until. And that will be until the next day when the case is being heard. We want to send a message to the government that Lynn Stewart and other political prisoners have not been forgotten. When I talk to Lynn, the first thing I always say is, how are you? And her answer always is, Ralph, I'm in jail. That says so much. But one of the important things is that I know they have not broken her spirit, because when she was dealing with the second inmate that died while they were in prison, while asking for medical help, while being denied medical help under the guise that they were just faking it. And when the second inmate died,
who was ailing and being aided by Lynn, was refused medical treatment by the prison authorities, and she died. And Lynn was warned not to say anything about it, told that if she said anything about it, that they would take away her basic privileges. They would put her in the hole. She would be cut off from her correspondence, from her telephone calls. And Lynn's response was to say, what I will say is, I charge murder.
Lynn was helping one inmate who was on dialysis, who was asking for help, and they were sending to the nurse's office for help, and they were telling the authorities that this woman was very sick. They said that there's nothing wrong with her. She was faking it. And in the end, Lynn was helping the woman get down to the nurse's headquarters, and they didn't quite make it. They got to the lavatory, and Lynn laid her down on the lavatory floor where the woman died. When I was talking to Lynn about it, she says, Ralph, I don't want to go that way. The authorities spoke to Lynn and said that no one was to blame. This is just something that happened. And a year later, or less, another woman begins to complain about being in great pain, and they tell her that she is faking it, and there's nothing wrong with her. And Lynn was not involved in helping her get to the nurse's office, but she died. and then they realized that she had a broken hip. So she had been surviving with a broken hip, complaining about her pain, and the prison saying that she was faking it. And there was another memorial service. The authorities came to Lynn and said, listen, they're going to ask you to speak, but you must remember that this is not about blame. So speak, but not about blame. So Lynn called me to say, listen, this is going to affect you as well as it's going to affect me, because if I speak and they don't like it, I may lose my commissary, I may lose my phone calls, I may lose my ability to write to you because it's for 30 days when they cut you off. So I asked, well, what are you going to say? And her instant response started with, I charge murder. So I says, you don't have to go any further. And I was very thrilled because I realized at that moment they had not broken her spirit. They can threaten her, they can say what they're going to do, but her spirit is still alive, and she was very angry. Well, she did give that speech. And when they suggested she stop, she continued. And when they removed her from the area in which she was speaking, she shouted out, Tiki, which was the name of the woman who had died, are you still faking it? Are you faking it now? Well, of course, all the inmates cheered, and of course they told Lynn she had a hearing the following Monday. She had got a chance to call me, and she says the hearing's going to be Monday, and I don't know what they're going to do. And she described what going to a hearing was about. You become handcuffed behind your back, and, you know, she has short arms, and she says it's painful. And then they do a body search before you go in to the hearing and a body search when you come out. And she says it is very uncomfortable. So when she was going to the hearing, handcuffed, when she got inside the room, she says it was about a half hour with her hands handcuffed behind her back. She had asked that they remove the handcuffs so she could get her papers and organize them. And they told her, listen, they're not going to sanction her, but she is going to have to speak to the chaplain. So she spoke with the chaplain, and she says, you know, the chaplain started off with, well, Miss Stewart, I'm sure you understand the difference between grieving and a grievance. And so her answer was, of course, but you have to understand in grieving, you first have to speak the truth. And she gave him a lesson on language. Our wordsmith straightened out the chaplain, and they sent her back to her room and said, listen, Ms. Stewart, we believe you. We're not going to do anything. So she dodged a bullet, but more important than that, she was ready to take the bullet, but she was not ready to be silenced. And this tells me the most important thing of all, her spirit is not broken, and she talks constantly of doing cases, and now they're up to she's up to number three in terms of people getting out due to the work that she's doing in the prison. And when there was the third person got notification that they would be leaving, the other inmates cheered, and they have a celebration around these momentous occasions. But what has happened is you can imagine how many people get in line now that they know that she's for real. And she says it's overwhelming. She tries to do it all, and she is being swamped, and she feels bad that she cannot do the work that she'd like to do. But it has inspired her. For when she first went in, she had said, when this 28 months is, or when she was first sentenced, she had said, when these 28 months are over, I'm just going to pull in my shingle and call it quits. Since she's been in jail, she says, there are so many people doing long terms in jail that would not be so if they had a decent lawyer who would take time to look at them and do their cases. So now she has been invigorated. If she gets out, and I say when she gets out, she's going to go to the Supreme Court to fight her original charge from the outside and try to get back in the law field, because we certainly do need her out here. And so they have inspired her rather than hurt her. She still needs an operation. She is still ill. And and my daughter, our daughter, the doctor, is working with one of the prison doctors to get her out to go to a facility to get her operation. It will not. We don't know. The prisons don't tell you what they're doing. Our daughter is satisfied that the hospital is a hospital with a reasonable record. We're hoping for the best. They don't tell you if and when she will get an operation. But I'm hoping that we have the appeal, that we win the appeal, that she gets out, and that she can go to a doctor in New York to have the necessary procedures, to be with the people she loves and the people who support her. And I think that would be the greatest medicine of all, to have Lynn Stewart in a New York City hospital where the hospitals would be overflowed with myself and other people wanting to visit her. So this is where we are today, and I'm asking for everyone's participation. I'm asking the radio programs to play this message so that people, everyone, within the voice, within the reach of those who care, will be able to participate. And thank you, thank you, thank you.
Lynn Stewart has spent a lifetime defending those who need defending. And when she's in prison, she continues doing exactly that. She is the same defender of us all. It's important, I think, to put this in a very particular context. When the war of terror was unleashed, when its victims were selected, when the propaganda machine was engendered, when the people of the United States were subject to this submersion in propaganda, it was called engineering consent. Engineering consent for wars abroad, engineering consent for repression at home. Just 2 days ago, the diplomatic editor of The Guardian, Borger, published an article called Engineering Consent for an Attack on Iran. And in that article, he pointed out that the head of U.S. intelligence, the top intelligence official, James Clapper, the U.S. Director of National Intelligence, has stated that Iran is planning to carry out an attack inside the United States. And the Guardian headline states, this is an engineering of consent. The silencing of Lynn Stewart is about continuing to engineer consent through repression, continuing to engineer consent by framing people for crimes of the government's own doing, continuing to engineer consent so the repression of the 1% over the 99% can continue, so the wars can continue, so all of us will lose our voices as well as our freedom. Lynn is continuing to struggle against that. She is our voice now as she was before, and we have to continue to fight for her.
Ralph, as the summary in the appeal states, when the constitutional right to speak freely on a subject of public importance is taken from Ms. Stewart, it is taken from all of us. Ralph Poynter, please repeat for everyone the important events that are taking place, the 28th, culminating in the oral arguments before this horrible three-judge members of the appellate court that instructed Judge Kotel to give Lynn a virtual life sentence.
Yes, and the 28th at Foley Square, we will gather to let Lynn and the nation hear our voice. We are going to occupy that square that is right beside the courthouse.
Overnight.
Overnight.
Of events.
You're going to stay with musicians, drummers, speakers, singers, and let our voice be heard so that there be no mistake on what the people are thinking about what is happening with the government and I do not call it our government. Our government has been hijacked. So please come out and show your dissent. Please come out and speak your voice with your presence on those days, or one day, whatever day that you can do, to support Lynn Stewart and all political prisoners. Thank you.
Again, this has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, along with
Ralph Fuentes,
with an update on the case of Lynn Stewart. We thank all of you who've been in steady contact with Lynn and supporting her in her travail while she is in prison in Texas. Remember, it is all our efforts that will get Lynn out of prison. Keep up the work. Tatam ta chinda paro tatam ta filo nokmi wala ngane.